Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College Ball Show returns. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss everything going on in the world around college football. How about we do that? Welcome back to the podcast. It was a pretty damn good week, if I don't say so myself. We had those two top 12, I believe. Yeah, Texas A&M was 12, right? So yeah, we have the two top 12 matchups, everybody, you know, going head to head in that top 12, had some interesting outcomes when it comes to that. You know, Clemson just kind of Texas A&M was basically like a tree, like a big old tree trunk, and Clemson just chopped their ass down all afternoon. That's basically what happened there. However, in the Texas LSU game, good golly, LSU, that's right, I said it. You don't have to, like, rewind the tape or anything like that or turn the volume up. LSU has an offense. Can you freaking believe it? After all these years, I mean, even when they won the national championship, if you're being honest, their offense was, you know, I'm not saying it couldn't put up points, but, you know, it was pretty bad. They had three 100-yard receivers. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, there is a variety of action that we're going to go to and just kind of recap the weekend. Like I said, it was a really good weekend. We had a variety of upsets inside the top 25. We had some almost upsets. That's right, I'm talking to you, Michigan. And hey, Army showed up. I mean, Army couldn't really do crap. They came out flat against who? Rice? Yeah, they played Rice and looked pretty bad. And, you know, I remember talking them up, and they helped me out there. They helped me up there. So we're going to go over, you know, what happened, a variety of items that we're going to cover. Of course, we'll take a look at next weekend as well, week three. On paper, now, I'll just be honest. There is usually one somewhat dud, I guess you could say, in the 14 or 15-week season that is college football regular season, including the conference championships. You tend to get a dud weekend in there. You know, we kind of felt like, I wonder if the first weekend would be that, and it surely wasn't. We might have a dud weekend here, but, you know, as far as college football in the regular season goes, we say it time and time again on this podcast, the college football regular season, say whatever you want about the playoff thing, the bowls, too many of them, yeah, we know. But during the regular season, as far as team sports in general, whatever you want to say, it is the best regular season, hands down. So week three might pop off. I mean, we do have games that these could all be ranked versus ranked. 18 Michigan State versus ASU, who was previously ranked. Number 17, Central Florida versus Stanford, who was previously ranked until they got walloped late in that game by USC and their quarterback. They found a quarterback. They got a quarterback hurt. They found one. Number 19, Iowa in Iowa State. By the way, the Cyclones were previously ranked. Number 24, USC in BYU. BYU just pulled an upset. Now, they beat Tennessee. I guess this season, that's not saying much. But by the way, I did call that upset of the week. We won't get into that. I generally don't toot my own horn, but toot. Anyway, so we're going to get all into it, right? We're going to recap. We're going to look at the weekend. Of course, we got to do the crafty, crappy pick of the week where my co-host blindly throws the game at me, garbage team versus garbage team. And the thing only heats up. The more stats that we have to that accumulate, you know, week after week to see just how bad these teams are, it just gets better. I'll be honest with you. It just gets better as the season goes on. I'm 2-0 in there, but I got to say, you know, it's been a light 2-0. I'm not going to sit here. Well, I just said it. I'm not going to toot my own horn. I'm not going to, you know, pump up my chest for these first 2 weeks because it's going to get that much more difficult coming up. By the way, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoveradio. It streams live. It archives. It's basically the headquarters, okay? But if you want to listen to Ropeitove Radio podcast with this College Ball Show, that's where it's under, you can find it at iTunes, a.k.a. Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Spricker, Stitcher, TuneIn, pretty much everywhere out there that you listen to your podcast. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. That can be found everywhere, including iHeartRadio. We're available on Spotify as well. In fact, you can use your Siri or Alexa through TuneIn or Spotify to find the College Ball Show under the Ropeitove Radio podcast. TheGruelingTruth.net. Head on over there. TheGruelingTruth.net. It's football. It's basketball. It's baseball. It's boxing. It's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, BetDSI.eu. That's BetDSI.eu. They have a promo code, TGT. So the promo code TGT, as in the Grueling Truth. And one more thing for you before we start breaking down week two and get into some of this betting lines for week three. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you already have, try not DirecTV. It's AT&T Now. Okay. AT&T Now, no annual contract. In fact, you have a 7-day free trial you can take advantage of. You can stream it anywhere. The plans start as low as $50 a month, HBO included. Check out AT&T Now, the cable streaming service. It's not just an ad. It's a way of life. Okay, that was really, really corny, okay? But I do use AT&T Now, just so you know. And I was on DirecTV Now, right? And then obviously there was a merger, but now they got more money, it seems like, into it. And it's there wasn't many problems. You know, when you're streaming, especially cable streaming, you're going to run into some issues. That's just how it is right now. That's where the technology is. But ever since it flipped over to AT&T, it's been better. I'm just saying it, okay? I'm not – they didn't pay me to say that part. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host Marshall and see what's going on down there in Texas. Texas Longhorns still licking their wounds. I think they – LSU just scored another touchdown, dude. LSU just scored another touchdown. That's their fourth 100-yard receiver. What's going on, Marshall? How the hell are you, buddy?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. A couple of NFL games yesterday didn't go how I wanted them to financially, but, you know, if I was a perfect gambler, I'd be living in Vegas in a mansion right now sitting in a pool, so that's not quite happening. But overall, I'm doing pretty good. College football this weekend, I guess I enjoyed that day a little bit more. I was surprised. I wish I would have had the courage to bet USC. You know, I was pretty rough on my boys because I've been used to beatdown after beatdown by Stanford. It seems like they've won the past 7 out of 8 times, and they get down early, and then USC just turned it on with a backup QB. It was just a surprising way to kind of cap off a good Saturday of football. I haven't seen them whoop Stanford in a long time. So maybe the new guy's going to save Clay Helton his job. We'll see. We get to face BYU this week, but unlike week one where both my teams were Mizzou had a huge victory over West Virginia, almost an easy one. West Virginia is not quite what they were last year. That's actually a hell of a drop. If you go from Will Grier, who was a elite college quarterback for college standards, now you have a team that looks to be dead. But Mizzou and USC both have nice wins. I saw your boy, and I love the guy, PJ Fleck, was able to sneak out an overtime victory. So, and your Hurricanes, I'm not sure how that one finished. But overall, our teams, I think in general, assuming Miami won, had a lot better Saturday than the week prior, my friend.
Well, thanks for, I got an open wound over here. You're just putting lemon and salt and all sorts. And the Hurricane. Oh, wait, I don't know. They lost, dog. They freaking lost. You're up here talking about Hurricanes in a positive light. And by the way, we're not talking about the Hurricanes that are coming through. You know, we're talking about Miami Hurricanes. But anyway, I'll let you slide on that because you had a good week. But I'm a little pissed off in the back of my – I'm a little pissed off. Okay, but anyway, but how can I be as a Gopher fan? Okay, and by the way, Antoine Winfield. First of all, Antoine Winfield, the Vikings player, he's one of my favorite Vikings of all time. He's like 5'8", buck 80, but he'll make every tackle you need. He's basically like a third linebacker or the fourth linebacker. And oh, by the way, he's a cover corner. His kid, who as a senior in high school was bigger than him. He's like 5'10", almost 200 pounds. He obviously married a woman bigger than him, which I suppose at 5'80", buck, 75, it doesn't take that much. But anyway, Antoine Winfield Jr. This is a college ball show. We understand the Gophers aren't a big deal, but hey, we're going to have to get to this, okay? Antoine Winfield Jr., in the end zone, in double overtime, gets a great interception to close the game down. And it was phenomenal. It was awesome. It was a great comeback, by the way. Great catch, by the way, by Bell to get that foot down somehow, some way. But talk about deja vu. Last year, Antoine Winfield in the end zone, same thing, even a better interception, intercepts the same squad, Fresno, to end the game. Back-to-back years, Winfield Jr. making interceptions to close down the game. Wow, it feels good. But anyway, that's enough Gopher talk. We understand this is not a local Gopher podcast here, okay? We're going to get back to the nitty-gritty, okay? We're going to get back to our bread and butter. But, sometimes you just got to gloat. Sometimes you just got to gloat. So Clemson and A&M, we'll start with that. We already let the cat out of the hat with LSU just putting up points, and every time Texas came back, yada, 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 they would just smash their dreams of ever coming back, right? That's what was happening in that game. But Clemson, I said it in the opening, Marshall, Texas A&M was like a big old tree trunk, right? Like a big old trunk of tree. And they just chopped it until that thing fell over. And it wasn't the prettiest display of offense. 24-10 it ended up being. But like I said, man, they just dominated it. Just dominated. And 53 yards rushing from a rushing team is pretty impressive. They didn't have a 100-yard rusher, surprisingly. Well, not necessarily. A&M's pretty good at rushing defense. But they still manage over 121 for the afternoon. Once again, Lawrence has a pretty good day. Nothing special. Nothing that's going to boost his Heisman, potential. But Clemson just looking like a dominant force. And the game was actually a lot less close than it was last year.
Yeah, we had talked about on our podcast last week how would A&M's quarterback do Like, he's always seemed to me, whenever I've watched Annan play, he's a very, elusive, athletic quarterback. He's not really a pocket passer, and that's not really the way to beat Clemson, I would say, because their D-line is normally so good. So if your game plan is to try to kind of wander around, maneuver around, kind of have like a little backyard, schoolyard football touch to your game, that's probably not going to work. And when you score 10 points in the game, clearly the line of scrimmage battle was proven to favor Clemson that game. It just, at A&M, I think week one against Texas State scored like 42 or 43 points. And even though A&M lost, their fans probably expected Chris to reach a little more over 10, I would assume. I mean, Clemson, Bama, whenever they seem to play, it always seems to be a bloodbath against points. So I'd be a little disappointed in the offense. Obviously, A&M's defense, if you hold them to 24, that's probably about as pretty good as you can do. Like, from a defensive standpoint, obviously A&M didn't, play a gem of a game, but 24 points with Clemson, that's pretty good. So I think it was just really a bad matchup for their quarterback, Mon. And, I'm sure next week they'll play a team of lesser caliber. Actually, with A&M, they got a freaking gauntlet of a schedule, so who knows. But they'll probably get a little more back on track offensively. But, yeah, I think we kind of nailed it with our preview of you're not really going to beat A&M if you have a quarterback that's not much of a pocket passer. And I think that goes to show with the outcome of the score.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That is a good point. And like I said, they look pretty damn good defensively, man. That secondary that they have is off the charts. It's not like, A&M's done. They're done as far as, having a great season. But that has a lot to do with
their
schedule. Well, that has a lot to do with their schedule,
brother. Holy
shit. Yeah. What's that?
I get what you're saying, but they might win six or seven games this year. That schedule is so the toughest thing in the country this year. It's not even fair. So on one hand, you're like, okay, you lost to Clemson. You're right. That isn't really a big deal. But if you're an Aggies fan and you were just ranked 12th in the country, you still have to play Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. You currently have to play the 8th-ranked team in the country, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. God. If you're an Aggies fan, find your favorite drink of choice and just buy a couple bottles of it for your upcoming Saturdays because, and the kicker of it all, Chris, is that your last two games are at Georgia, at LSU. That Jimbo must have pissed off someone, I'm telling you. And you're like, you know what? Jimbo, did us wrong in Florida State, or he said something wrong to one of my favorite people in my life. Let's make sure that he has a little bit of a tough season at A&M this year, because to finish those two games on the road, that is just – it's a cruel and unusual punishment.
Well, they weren't going to have him show up saving or anything like that. You can't just come in the SEC and start dominating or anything like that. We're going to put your load up there and make you work for it. But as far as what I was saying, it's really not a big deal because it's not like they were going to run the table. You know what I mean?
No.
It really doesn't matter. That they could. We've said that before. If they get 8 wins out of this year, maybe a hardcore fan is like, oh, dude, 8 A&M's, this, that, and the other, and the recruits and all that stuff and all the money that they put in the program. Yeah, but 8 wins on that schedule, like you were saying, is pretty would be pretty damn good overall. Let's move to that LSU and Texas A&M game, battle of two top 10 teams. And, Burrow had a good season, sometimes very good, sometimes very limited. Basically an LSU quarterback. He had a pretty good last year. Nothing flashy, nothing that would stand out and say, dude, wait till next year with this Burrow, dude. You didn't really feel that at the end of last year. Now, you as a team, you knew they were young. They were one of the most inexperienced teams last year, so you knew they'd be good to go this year. But as far as a quarterback play, it's not like you were like, dude, this guy's coming, man. This guy's really, really good. But it doesn't matter what we think. It matters what happened on the field. And If you would have told me that they didn't, you know, that LSU didn't have a 100-yard rusher, they only got to 102 at 3.5 a clip, you know, I'd probably be like, wow, you know, that must have been a really tight game, and Texas outrushed them and that type of thing. And they probably lost or whatever, but that wasn't the case. That was not the case. Now, it was a tit-for-tat for a while. It was a back-and-forth game. And then LSU kind of opened it up. Now, did they run all the way away with it? No, it was 20-7 at half. You know, they would stretch it to 9 points or whatever, and Texas would come back. And it was kind of back and forth. They got the 45-31 right when they just got back. So they always had an answer for Texas. And for LSU, Marshall, to have an answer on offense, that's pretty scary. 31 of 39, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, 471 yards. And like I said, 3 100-yard receivers, which is silly and ridiculous altogether. But happening at LSU is just like, I still can't believe it. What'd you think of the game? Because it was a really fun game to watch. Obviously, Texas kind of looked like they were going to start somewhat fast, drop that pass. Kind of a weird start for Texas. It looked like they were going to jump out. They kept making little minor mistakes. The red zone was not their friend for a while. But like I said, LSU always had an answer when that momentum was starting to pick up for the Longhorns. The Tigers would just shut them down. What'd you think of that, just let's sling this thing? They had a lead for most of the game, but yet, Marshall, 39 attempts passing, which is ridiculous. 31 completions, that's great. What was going on? What's going through your mind? Now, Texas Longhorns right now are not, they're a Big 12 team. So we know they don't have a top 10, you know, defense in the nation. So you do have to, you know, kind of legislate from there, but still, dude, I mean, we've seen a bulldozer, you know, game where they blow out someone 35-3 and just take their will from them by just, you know, running the ball from LSU, I'm speaking of, but this thing, I did not see that coming. I saw LSU winning, but I did not see that type of air display from the Tigers.
Yeah, you know, Burrow, we talked about him last week. Last week, I think we were actually kind of smart, Chris, looking back at how some of these things turned out. We'd mentioned how Burrow's been making progression. Last year, he would have a lot of games where the stat line would look, you know, ugly, 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 like hung over ugly. But he would make a clutch play or two to get the wins. And I think this year he's maybe fine-tuned his passing skills to where, you know, he won't have 10 incompletions in a row. It's more fluid passing, you know, quick shot, quick shot, quick shot. You know, I know the first couple of games, LSU, he's focused on, like, shorter passes. But, hey, if you're gonna be throwing the ball at this rate and you got receivers, especially that Jefferson kid who can make yards after the catch, like, dude, you can have all the quick passes you want, but something's happened. I think, you know, obviously progression has helped. Last year, Burrow kind of came in as like, hey, is this kid going to make the job? And he wins the job, and they have a hell of a year. And now I think the offense is progressing. And as we've all kind of realized, the LSU's always had a defense. I think two nights ago wasn't maybe their best effort. Now, in some sense, that kind of became a shootout type of game. To give Texas credit, they had a decent display of their passing game there for a while. They always seem to have good receivers. It's been that way for a couple of years. Obviously, if that game's in Death Valley, I don't think Texas gets those points. But, I mean, it's confident Texas offense. They did pretty well. LSU probably could have had a little bit of a more stellar game. But, as you mentioned, the offense is humming. And that defense in a really, really big game is only going to bring it even more. That's a very scary potential. And I remember, and I'll give myself credit for this, about 3 years ago when they hired Coach O, I was one of the few people that was like, you know what? This guy's a hell of a recruiter. everywhere he goes, he brings in the top-end kids. The kids love him. Let's give him a chance. Yet probably 90% of the media, LSU fans included, were saying that is one of the most dumbest hires of the year. I can't wait to get rid of him, blah, blah, blah. All Coach O has done, Chris, in his past 9 games against top-10 ranked teams, not counting Alabama, has gone 9-0. So a guy that was perceived as basically a hack, a dumb hire, why are they doing this? All the guy can do is recruit, is now 9-0 against top-10 teams as a head coach there, not counting Nick Saban. And I think that leaving out Nick Saban's a fair part. Or, hell, even say 9-2, whatever. The dude's winning big games, game after game after game, and he's in the SEC. He's not getting these free passes or, it's like he's in the Pac-12 or ACC cleaning up like Clemson does. This dude's winning big game after big game, and now you have an offense with a defense? I think there's a lot of stock in it of people saying that LSU has a legit chance of being a Final Four team this year, and their percentages are going up and up in Vegas. Now, this is some big foreshadowing and hoping, but some people are thinking that they can run the table and lose to Bama and be a contender. But and from a sense, it's possible, just because, if you mentioned, Joe Burrow's got the offense going, that defense will step up, and they won probably
their
toughest challenge. Yeah, and they won their toughest challenge on the road besides Bama. Hell, if they lose to Bama, it is what it is. But besides that, they're going to be favored in every game or be a very competitive team. So, yeah, man, it is different, because normally for LSU, it's always been, you have a hell of a running back. You kind of work the system, have a little more of a pro-style offense. Now you're flinging the ball around, man, a lot of potential. And, again, I'll comment one more time. If you hate it on the man, he's proven you wrong, and who knows how long he'll be there as a head coach. But you really can't doubt what Coach O has done, because that win-loss record has been marvelous, and he's shown up in almost every big game he's been on the sidelines for that team.
Definitely. Now, I do got to clean it up for you a little bit on your stats, okay? I had these ready to go in the chamber, so I got to clean it up a little bit. The 9-0, that was 9 games against top-10 opponents is what it was. Not counting Alabama would be 3 games. Okay. So he's 6-0. He's 6 now, which is, this is not dampening what we're talking about. I was literally locked and loaded, ready to give you these stats after. So it was a shine on him, because just having to face 6 opponents in the top 10 in 3 years tells you what kind of schedule they have to play. Obviously. So, but yeah, 6-0 in those games, they won basically 34 points. But against Bama, 0-3, and they put up 3.3 points. So they do have to get that figured out, but who the hell doesn't have to get it figured out besides Dabo and Urban Meyer or something like that against Saban. But yeah, dude, it's silly. And just more on Burrow real quick, just to put a bow on this, 471 passing is the second most in LSU history. They've only had 4 over 400 in general. And look at this. Passes thrown 15 yards or more downfield. Okay, so obviously, the longer the pass, the actually goes down, right? That's pretty obvious. So on those passes, 15 plus, right? 11 of 13 for 307 and 3 touchdowns. Wow, dude. That is impressive. It's not like it was just the dink-a-dunk show. They were chucking that thing. And like I said, every single time, A&M would – or not A&M, but Texas would, sneak back in the game like, okay, here we are. Dude, we had a nice drive. And Ellinger played great considering their running back situation. He played phenomenal, I thought. So it's not like Texas season is over either. They went down, though, swinging 45-38. Really good game, though. Fun game, no doubt about it. But, yeah, to go on the road like that, that's a big win, man. That is a big win. And, I'm still shocked from it. I really am still shocked for it. Now, there is a variety of upsets. Washington went down. Other teams in the top 10 went, or top 25 went down as well. We'll get to those We'll get to those. Maryland is still scoring points. They just housed Syracuse 63-20. Colorado beat Nebraska, who was just barely ranked. So the Stanford loss is a ranked team. We'll get into some of that, no doubt about it. But we can't go anywhere without talking Michigan and Army. I mentioned how against somehow, some way, we talked about it week one, and you know, you were all like, we're both going, hey, didn't you put money with them? You put money on Rice with them, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
They needed a late fourth freaking quarter to go ahead, touchdown. I should complete that. 14-7 to beat Rice. It's just, this is college football in a nutshell, dude. When you're dealing with 18 to 20 somethings, you just don't know what you're going to get week to week. But Army came out to play, and sure, Michigan had a bunch of fumbles. They were killing themselves, but Army's right there. It's not like it was just like ghost fumbles. Army was doing their thing. They almost got the job done here, dude. 24-21, double overtime. Michigan survives a game that is just a must win for them, obviously, for many, many reasons. What'd you think of this game? I mean, it was a 22-point spread, and in my against the spread, I said, hey, you take a flyer out on that. I know last week was weird, but maybe they were caught looking ahead, right? Looking ahead to this big game with Michigan. I don't know what it is, but this, I mean, it's bad already, right? But remember, last year, Army took Oklahoma to overtime, right? Was it overtime game? I believe it was an overtime game. So let's not get ahead of ourselves and just say, oh, Michigan's garbage this year again or something like that. But this one shook me to the core watching this thing before I went to work, man.
Yeah, I don't quite just get it. That should have been a little more of a stellar victory by Michigan. And we're still, you know, this is doing Harbaugh no favors either. He's already kind of on a hot seat simply because he can't beat Ohio State. But when you have games like this, it makes the people kind of even poke at you a little more. Now, again, you got the victory. If they had lost this, oh boy, the media probably really would have been on them. But, I mean, they got the job done. But, again, you're at home, and this is a game where, again, Vegas had you favored by 3 touchdowns. It shouldn't be that close. But are we, again, to the point where Michigan can't figure out their offense? I know I'm making a lot of assumptions here for a game, but that's been the case for Michigan now for the past 3 seasons, I would say, where the defense with Don Brown is a badass defense, but their offense can't get going. And Shea Patterson was this, you know, apparent godsend from Ole Miss, and we're still getting to the point where, you know, is he the right person? And I don't think, you know, Army's defense is that stellar. I mean, obviously, you know, when you ever have, like, the service teams are always organized, disciplined. Army has had a very good couple of past years. They're not a joke of a team. But if you're Michigan, it's the same MO again. And I will say the one thing that does make it a little understandable is that when you do play a team like Army, if they do find a rhythm and motion for their offense,
right?
The game, the the time of possession. There we go. When you play a team that runs the option, the time of possession game will murder you. You know, so many top-end colleges now in college football are looking to have no huddles or rhythm or quick up-tempo offenses and try to score in 2 to 3 minutes. Our Army is incredibly content with having like a 14-play, 75-yard drive with a touchdown or a field goal, and you look up at the scoreboard and you're like, holy crap, the quarter's over. Like, what just happened? So when they do get into a rhythm, I'll admit that it is hard to score points because – your defense is getting beat up. They're having, like, the linemen chop block their knees all day. I mean, it's not a fun team to play against. So if they do win the time of possession, it is a bitch to try and score and get a big up on them. You know, to some credit, though, Michigan, they're down 14-7 and a half. You're kind of playing into their style. So, again, a win that was needed, not impressive, but a needed win. And, you know, are we going to see Michigan's offense sputter for a few more weeks? Because it just seems to be auto repeat. And maybe Shea Patterson can switch it up. But, man, I'd still be a little bit scared of the Michigan fan because we seem to be repeating the same conversations we've had, Chris, now for the past two seasons at the same point where we are now.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. It's and you have to put it in perspective. It's offense is the issues. We know that. Now, you do have to put his reign, you know, his I shouldn't say reign, his time there as a coach. You know, last year was a horrendous loss to Ohio State in that game. I mean, it got out of hand. But the 2 years before that, we have to – you got to slow down, hit the brakes a little bit because we saw what that came down to. We still don't even know if what's-his-toe's got that first down in overtime for sure. Nobody really knows. And then the year before, the Michigan State thing. So we got to put it all there, but, you know, you could only do that for so long because last year that wasn't the case. They got their ass kicked. You know what I mean? So this year – you know, you've been there now for a while, so this has got to start looking like your team. And, people are going to say, hey, if you don't have Andrew Luck or even Kaepernick, a guy that can do both, you know, run and pass, I guess he's not that good of a coach. You know what I mean? That's what people are going to say. That's I mean, what else are they going to say? You know, so it's interesting, man. That one was spooky, though. That one was spooky. Marshall and BYU. Boise State was a pretty good game. Marshall's a good team. They have 34 Florida players, so that makes them a pretty good club right there. That's pretty crazy. But they won 14-7. Otherwise, you got to go all the way down to number 14 Washington to really find a tight game that we haven't mentioned. A lot of blowouts inside that top 13 or whatever, for the most part anyway. But then we get to the weather-delayed game between Washington and Cal. And this is kind of funny, too, dude, because Washington 2 years ago, for probably 2 and 3 years ago, when Browning just got there and they had Ross and they had all these skilled players, they were just up and down, up and down. They could score with the best of them, right? And then they got a defense. And now they got a defense, and hey, it's just like Michigan. Now they're not putting up points like they used to in games they need to anyway. They go down 20-19. I didn't see this one coming at all. Like I said, it was like a 2-3 hour, I think it was 2.5-3 hour, something like that, delay from the weather and whatnot. Easton is the brand new quarterback there that's supposed to be the stud. He won the job. He really didn't look all that. Now, obviously, weather played into it, but Cal was playing right with them. And Cal's from, well, Cal, Berkeley. So, you know, they went up to the Northwest, and there's no excuse there. That was a little bit of a surprise, and we're going to see what Washington does the rest of the way because I actually thought Washington would kind of put it on them. And I believe, maybe I'm wrong, but I believe it's back-to-back years that Cal beat them. I'm almost positive Cal beat them last year too.
Yeah, you're right. And it is true. Last year was a really, really low-scoring game. Cal has always been known, since their new coaches arrived, to have a very, very good defense. They're one of the few teams in the country whose defense is phenomenal. And their offense is like, you know, normally when a coach comes in college football, normally they bring together a strong offense and try to piece together a defense. Cal is the complete opposite. But whatever game plan they've established over the past couple of years, they have found a way to massively slow down whatever Washington has to offer. And they're kind of becoming a pain in the ass for Washington because you mentioned that's the second year in a row now where they've lost. Last year they lost at Cal. This year, Washington was actually a 14-point favorite at home, Chris, and a team that, you know, wasn't maybe a lock to win the Pac-12, but a team that people thought was going to have a pretty good chance of doing it. And now you lose your first conference game. It's like, Jesus, you know, that's – I don't know. They just have their number. sometimes in college football, we will talk about games this year where we'll have, you know, a discussion on, well, you know, I like this, and this part's good, and this part's good, and all the X's and O's look at numbers favoring one team. But in college football, whether it's a rivalry, the way you catch a team on a certain week, just whatever matchup, sometimes the X's and O's don't matter, and we've learned that over time. But Justin Wilcox, there we go, the Cal head coach, that dude's put together a hell of a defense. And if he can get the offense together piece by piece, Cal's going to have a pretty nice year. And I guarantee you this will not be the last time we speak about Cal upsetting someone else in the Pac-12 this year, whether they're going to upset USC, Oregon, Utah. They're going to get someone else's number just because their defense is so damn good. And if you can put together, you know, kind of a half-ass offense every once in a while, Chris, you're going to sneak out some victories. And that's a tough loss for Washington and kind of a pain in the butt to start the season that way to go 0-1 in conference already.
Yeah, and it's not like you can blame the weather because, like I said, I mean,
no,
they went up
right
north to do it. You know what I mean? a lot of blowouts. Penn State at half was down, but then they blew them out. Buffalo's actually not that bad of a club. Oregon, hey, Oregon, wow, you need some offense? Yeah, I'll wait the next week after. 77-6. I actually thought Nevada, coming off that Purdue win, would be able to lose by 28 points. That was not the case. 77-6. Wisconsin rolling. Wisconsin and Maryland are just putting up points back. I mean, it's nuts. Central Florida, easy win. Michigan State as well. Iowa roll over our Rutgers club for a week. Now it's not our Rutgers club. But Maryland, I think Maryland's put up more points in the first two games since the forward pass, for Christ's sakes. I remember looking at this like, hey, Syracuse is without their guy from last year, Dungy. Let's take a gander. What's going to happen here? You know, Maryland was the favorite, right, by like 5.5 points or something like that. I remember kind of zeroing in on this game and say, hey, let's see what happens. 63-20. Wow. Maryland right now kind of seems like the real deal, and they always play my Gophers tough. But I'm pretty afraid of them right now. I got to admit, I'm pretty afraid of them at this moment. And just to close out this top 25, USC 45-20 and Colorado 34-31 over previously unranked Nebraska. NOT, they got the job done at home. A big win for Colorado, who like 3 years ago got up to like, what, 10 wins. And then kind of fell off these last couple of years. Let's talk about those Pac-12, I guess you could say, victories with Colorado anyway. USC. Oh, wait. Colorado's still in the Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
I saw something on Twitter the other day that said they're in the Sun Belt or something. I was like, what? What do you mean? I never looked back at it like, oh, that's bullshit. And I never followed up. That's why I just randomly thought that there. But USC gets the victory in Nebraska. You know, under this new coach, Frost, he's got to find a way to win the tight games. He hasn't been there that long. This isn't his full squad by any stretch. But he has been in some tight games, and he's 1-6 right now, games decided by 5 points or fewer. Now, like I said, it's not a long track record or anything like that. I'm not ready to say, oh, Nebraska needs to start to move someplace else, because you could see in the recruiting it's coming. But what'd you think about those two games? And like I said, especially USC, we talked about, you know, you have to talk about it much because you did, but what is it, Slavo? What's that guy's name now that you guys got there? Is it Is he Slovenian? Who is this guy? What is it?
Slavic.
Yeah, Slavic. JT Daniels goes down with a torn ACL, out for the season, and Slavis comes up out of nowhere, 28-33, 377, and I mean, he was phenomenal in like a 42-3 run in that little stretch there. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, ended the game on that. That was a shocker, dude. That was a shocker because, like we said, Stanford has basically been the big brother bully over those Trojans, and now the Trojans are fighting back.
You know, I remember when we started our podcast before the season started, I said there's a chance USC could start the season 1-5. Well, I'm happily wrong. They are 2-0. Now they got to play BYU, a team who I hate just because they've cost me money in multiple sports. So I'm hoping they'll for sure win. I actually was dumb enough to bet Tennessee this past weekend, who was a play away, if you learn how to run a freaking cover three, from winning me a nice size bet. Freaking, I'll go back to USC quickly. If you're Tennessee, you had an embarrassing loss. BYU has no timeouts left on the clock. It's like 3rd and 17. The time is running down. They're on like their own 20. They lob up this 40-yard pass, and how do you let a guy get behind you? Who then proceeds to run a good 40 yards. They kneel the ball. And, of course, Tennessee's dumbasses call a timeout because, God forbid, you want BYU to rush on the field and force a quick field goal. But, no, let's call a timeout and let them get all settled. I'm not even a Tennessee fan, and I'm pissed. They were one. Learn how to run a damn cover three. Anyway.
0-2. First time in 31 years, 0-2, the Tennessee Vols.
Well, if you learn how to run a simple damn cover, let no one get behind you. We've lived this moment in whether it be pro or NFL or call it, Chris, we've seen it happen all the time. And it's a couple times a year where you'll see, we got the game won all of a sudden. Uh-oh. What was the safety doing? We'll give that speech many times this year. Hopefully it doesn't cost me money. Hopefully I'm the guy in the lucky end of that deal. But I move on. Anyways, USC, and that game kind of pissed me off. I didn't watch all USC, but USC, man, that was an impressive victory. You know, they have a pretty hard schedule. The fear of starting out potential 1-5, 2-4, then all of a sudden Helton's job is probably done for good. You lose a quarterback in a relatively nice win week one, and you're thinking, oh boy, here we go again. And then this Keaton Slavis kid comes on the field and just appears to be lights out. Maybe it's the change of pace the team needed. Obviously that JT McDaniels could have been a hell of a quarterback, but something. I'm just looking for any type of optimistic way to start the year because besides Sam Darnold's magical year he had a couple years ago when they beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl, that was like the best win I've had as a USC fan in like 8 or 9 years. And that was one game over the past 9 seasons. So maybe in a year where we're really expected not to be super hyped, we'll have a better season. Because there has been times, and you've rightfully given me shit for it, my friend, and rightfully so. We're all USC's top 10 in the country. Well, what they do to deserve that? And that's a conversation I've had with you a lot of the times. But in fairness, they're ranked top 5 in the country. And then they finish like 7-4 or 7-5. You're like, well, Marshall, why are they ranked top 10 again? You know, that's that overhyped USC persona. Maybe a different mindset is something that the guys can use to motivate
coming
themselves.
Coming in unranked this year.
Yes, with doubts and expectations. Obviously, the media is not a huge fan of the head coach. Who knows how the players truly feel about him. But nonetheless, that's a chip on your shoulder you can get. So I truly hope they're going to beat BYU. I'm going to probably bet on them just because I want to. A nice win and a good win over a team that's had your number pretty much since we've done our podcast. I think this is year 9 of our podcast. I legit think USC's 2-7 now in the 9 years of our podcast. So nice win for the boys. I'm very happy. For Nebraska, Colorado, obviously Nebraska is such a proud tradition. You know, I told you last show, Chris, how the Iowa is now legalized sports gambling, and they had like over six figures in Iowa sportsbooks bet on Nebraska to win the title. There was like $300,000 bet that the Cornhuskers win the championship. So the fan base they have is just outrageous. they also, Colorado tried to get tricky and make it to where unless you had a Colorado zip code, you cannot purchase tickets. And I heard that, like, but Nebraska fans found a way. So these people are crazy for their team, but I've also always heard that if you go to a game, they're maybe some of the classiest fans in the country, as a rule. So everything's on the table, and you get Scott Frost, who's supposed to, you know, be your savior, because he played a hell of a quarterback for them back in the day. Last year was obviously bad. This year, you're sluggish week one. You have a kind of an old school rivalry game, which, you know, Colorado and Nebraska used to be a huge rivalry back in the day. They'd always play on Thanksgiving Day. I'm sure you remember that, my friend. And then you lose a game in the fourth quarter where you let Colorado score 24 points in the fourth quarter. Colorado had scored 7 points in the first three quarters. So clearly your defense was doing something good. You're up 17-0 at half. You got the momentum, obviously. And then you let it slip away, and they don't even score points in OT, and Colorado kicks out a game-winning field goal. That's another tough loss for Nebraska. And as you said, those fans are so passionate. They're probably saying, are we going to go through another rough year again with Scott Frost? Like, that's not – the guy won't get fired because he's still viewed as probably a pretty popular person. But as you mentioned, Chris, another maybe 2-2 start for Nebraska – those fans are going to start to get pretty ticked off with the team in general and the coach as well.
That's a good way to put it. A lot of these quote-unquote proud fan bases that haven't really been all that good, although What's-His-Toe has had them at like 9 or 10 wins a year, and that wasn't even good enough, remember? That wasn't even good enough. Nope, 9 to 10, screw that. Yep. So some of these fan bases need to just – this isn't Mike Rozier 1980s, okay? And it's not mid-90s either, okay? It's just not. So just calm down. Let the guy do his thing. But, yeah, the tight games, he's going to have to turn the corner on that at some point, though. That's just what it is. But it's his second year, so
– yeah, agreed.
We'll And we'll keep an eye on it. We'll keep an eye on it. My co-host, tried to assassinate my character early in the thing, talking about Miami. Yeah, the Hurricanes, man. This is great. Oh, they lost.
Apologies.
It's not easy to win a game when you get set down 17-3, though, in the first quarter. So, I like the way they brought the game back. But, I actually saw something that kind of made me chuckle a little bit in one of the college football forums and Facebook. Some dude had they had the head coach and had two what were like chains in his hands, but it said 0-2. It was pretty funny. It hurts, but it's funny. 28-25, What's-His-Toe's, who took over back to North Carolina. 2-0 in tight-ass games. That's pretty fun for them. And like I mentioned, we talked about it, but BYU, my upset special last week. You got to say BYU about 4 times a year, especially against the spread, because they tend to be in tight games, well-documented on this podcast. UCLA still can't put up points with Chip Kelly. San Diego State just handled them 23-14, just kind of manhandled them, didn't really let them do much. Is there any other games, that you want to talk about before we start to, narrow it down and get into this next week? Of course, we'll have the crafty pick of the week, the crafty, crappy pick of the week as well coming up to close the puppy down.
I will say it was almost to be like just pandemonium in Florida State. They won 44-45.
I forgot about
that. And this was not against a top 20 ranked team. This was not an elite matchup like LSU Texas. Florida State won 44-45 in OT against UL Monroe, who shanked an extra point in overtime. Mind you, this is the UL Monroe team who 2 years ago Florida State had to call due to a canceled game earlier in the season due to, like, a hurricane or weather, and schedule so they could become bowl eligible. This is, like, your little stepbrother that you beat up on.
Seriously.
And you on Monroe, again, Florida State, again, they were up 24-7 in the first half. Almost an identical score to Boise State last week. Okay? Now, did they win the game? Yes. But they won by 1 point due to a shanked extra point. That should not happen in college football. It's such a small kick. Anyways,
yeah.
They got super lucky. So if you're Willie Taggart, you best figure a couple things out because, you know, I know we give the ACC a lot of crap, and Clemson is truly so high above everyone else. But there's still normally teams that are very competitive. Pitt's always going to be a pain in your ass. Obviously, Clemson is good. Carolina's off to a good start
good.
With that, as you said. Your Miami boys are gonna put up a damn fight.
Good. You hear what he just said?
That's
Clemson
it.
Is good. Come on.
But Florida State, they better – I don't know. I don't care about them, but when you almost lose to Monroe, you got to figure out something. And maybe the coolest
Miami's
bearded coach –
But it's Miami's 0-2, but it's a completely different scenario than what's going on at Florida State. That's for sure. If you look at those teams that they've gone down, well, Boise State, that's different, but they had a lead in that damn game. Yeah, dude, it's Jimbo's looking real smart right about now, isn't he? You know what I mean? He's like, yeah I got out of there just in the nick of time. Anything else
maybe
there, sir?
Maybe a coach with like the coolest beard. Lovie Smith, I guess he's got a beard that looks like it's a 20-year-old beard.
totally.
2-0. And to give an update, so go Lovie, go Illinois. To give an update on our crappy pick of the week game from last week. Now, mind you, Kent State was a FBS, played an FCS school in Kennesaw State. We did not have a line on this game, but we assumed that with Kent State in the D1 school, a whole level above them would be an easy win. Kent State Golden Flashes in Dick Stadium gets a walk-off overtime field goal for the win. I found a hell of a game last week
for
struggling to find a good game. I picked a hell of a game. You moved to 2-0 because we cannot find the spread. But, man, our Kent State Golden Flashes were down 16-10 at half. And I think the boys are like, we best get going. These owls are killing us. So we'll get to round three coming up here soon. But we picked a hell of a game, an entertaining game, and a good job on Kent State pulling out the outright field goal walk-off victory.
Yeah, man, that was crucial. That was crucial. I still got a DVR. No, on Friday night. This might be interesting. It's one of those you may want to keep an eye on these. Friday night, Washington State, who's up to 20 now, offensive juggernaut, turned their defensive around basically last year. Against Houston, at Houston, Washington State's 8.5 points. That could get interesting. Just to kind of start things out with, that could get interesting. But like I said earlier in the podcast, a lot of these matchups could be ranked versus ranked. Number 18, Michigan State in ASU. Number 17, Central Florida in Stanford. I know why Stanford's not in the top 25 anymore. However, you know what I mean? It still could be Iowa. Number 19, Iowa versus Iowa State. We know that's going to be a barn burner. Like I said, on the surface, on paper, this week looks like a dud. Even the best, you know, team sports regular season, hands down, can have a dud week. This may be one, but don't be surprised if it's not. And it's full of great-ass games. They're just flying under the radar, basically. But some of these games, man, I really have some interest in. Arizona State, we've been kind of keeping an eye on them ever since Herm Edwards went there. We always thought, hey, I wonder what he can do, you know, as far as going in that living room and talking to mom. And you know damn well once you talk to Herm that you're going to, you know, play the game to win, so to speak. You're going to go probably to ASU after Herm Edwards is in your living room talking to your mom. That's just how it goes. and the guy only sleeps 3.5 hours, but you'd never know. He's full of energy. Michigan State looked really good last week, wasn't playing a great team or anything like that. They really fell out last year. You know, actually, was it two years? They haven't looked like the squad they had for about 5 years, program-wise. What do you think about this one? 18 Michigan State against ASU. This one could go either way. It's not a 50-50 game, but I'm looking at that spread, Marshall, 13 points, and that is at least an honorable mention for against the spread, just to kind of take a, you know, a little flyer out on it possibly, or just keep an eye on it, you know, keep an eye on it. You know, even last week with that A&M Clemson, remember it was up to 17.5 by Thursday. When I'm turning in my prediction blog, you know, for my college football picks, it was down to 16. So, and they, by the way, it did get against under the spread, because if you look how many points they lost, they got that garbage touchdown. So actually, they got under the spread. What do you think about this one? Michigan State is at home and is on Fox, 3 o'clock Central. But can Arizona State kind of be that pesky team that just gets in the way and turns out to be a better game than what Vegas is telling us?
I think that if Oklahoma State tells me, who gives a crap? I'm thinking if Arizona State, now that I got my West Coast states right, I think if they can score 14 points, I think that they'll probably cover. Michigan State, yet again, and it is crazy how we'll say a lot of time, like, you know, they were the same team last year. College football seems to have a lot of trends where the team does the same thing. Michigan State, again, same thing, has an incredible defense. Another badass defense in Sparty. But another offense that's, eh. So I think if, you know, speaking from a gambling perspective, I love that line, you know. Last year, Arizona State started off really hot. They had a couple of actually underdog upset wins. Now you got Herm Edwards again, almost a 2-touchdown underdog. I think if you're playing a team where the skill level maybe slightly favors Arizona State, obviously the home field advantage helps, Chris. I love this from a gambling part, because you're asking a team with a pathetic offense pretty much to find a way to beat a team by, you know, 2 touchdowns. Like, okay. I'll roll the dice with Herm there and see how the boys do. Like, that sounds like a great deal to me. So I do like that perspective from that part. Again, with the way he started last year, who's saying they couldn't upset a Spartan team this year? So I think that'll be a low-scoring game. I would not look at the over. I see that they are minus 13 for a point spread. I'll quickly find the over-under when I'll throw it back to you. But, yeah, I would love that game for looking at a gambling purpose, because Sparty's offense is trash. They just have another top 15 elite defense again.
Yeah, and it was 16-13 last year. Arizona State won at home. And we're not calling for a win. In fact, according to ESPN's Football Power Index, 88.8% chance they'll win. Hey, we're not calling for an upset. But 13 points, you know Arizona State is going to play to win the game. So, come on, dude. I'm calling it right now. Yep. I'm taking that against the spread for sure.
It's over under of 45 points. So, last year, what, they scored, what, you say, 29 points, 13-16?
Yep.
So, again, that's – Vegas is basically saying Arizona State, you're going to score maybe 2 touchdowns at most, really. So, again, if they can score 14, 17 points, you're looking at a chance to win or a brilliant chance to cover. I would definitely – or do a teaser, like find someone else to tease them with and get Arizona State to, like, plus 19. Then I'd feel super, super good. So, yeah, that put that one on your watch list and give that one a shot. But I would stay away from the over. If one team drops 40 points on you, so be it. But I would not lean betting over, because you're asking for quite a bit in that defensive matchup.
Yeah, definitely. And here is, it's kind of funny to say this, it feels strange, but the hardcore college football fans know right now, where the programs are right now, as of September 9th, 2019, the marquee matchup of the week is number 19, Iowa, versus number, well, they're not ranked, my bad, but it could be. They could be ranked. They were until they struggled. You know, maybe they were looking ahead. They haven't left the state of Iowa just yet because they had Iowa, Northern Iowa, actually, wasn't it? Iowa State in Iowa. This is a good-ass game. I am really looking forward to this game. And like I said, this is the marquee matchup, like it or not. You can make fun of it. You could say, oh, there's no way neither of these two. Okay, fine. That's fine. But it was 13-3 last year. And we know Iowa State, especially playing someone ranked, is not fun to play. And they're at home. And even the index, that good old, according to ESPN's Football Power Index that my co-host makes me mention this stuff, 42.3%. So they're giving it a chance. And then you say, well, Stanley's going to take care of business, dude. Well, they got an offense, too. And they got a Iowa State. I think Iowa State, TCU, usually was the defensive number one group, right? I think we can say that. That's probably usually who's number one as far as in the Big 12. Yeah. But Iowa State,
for sure,
I'd probably have to say, is taking over that, man. They can contain you to an extent anyway. I don't know the over-under, but right now Iowa is just a one-point favorite on the road. Marquee matchup. Who's gonna do this one, man? Who's taking this one?
This one is I think the momentum of the past couple of years would have you lean towards Iowa State, because 3-4 years ago, this was always kind of a fun game, but normally an Iowa victory just because they were so far ahead of Iowa State in the program. But since Matt Campbell's been at Iowa State, Chris, like, they've put together some really, really good seasons, and it seems like they're only getting better. I mean, last year he had a couple of guys go like first, second round picks. So what Campbell's doing in Iowa State, and I'm pretty high on the guy, so I'm a little bit of favoritism just because, you know, when we started our podcast, Iowa State was normally a team that win maybe 3-4 games a year and maybe get one upset and that's it.
We're talking about them in the winter playing basketball.
Because I love their basketball boys. That they've been proven for a while. But now you have a football team who's just nearly as damn good. Their season win total this year was over under 8. Mind you, this is a team 5 years ago who was happy to have 4-5 wins. So just from an overview, I think Iowa State's been leaning in the right direction. Now, with that being said, for a gambling purpose and a bet-watching purpose, Iowa State lost a wide receiver and a running back against the top two rounds of the draft. So you don't replace a guy like Montgomery, who I believe is on Pittsburgh now, who was a hell of a running back. Last year, that guy actually had a phenomenal game against Iowa. Literally was their workhorse. And was their workhorse against Saquon Barkley, too. I mean, this guy did all you could for an Iowa State running back. So I would lean towards Iowa simply due to the fact that I don't think maybe that Iowa State's recovered their offense yet due to losing their star wide receiver, who I'm drawing a blank on, but again, a top two draft overall pick along with Montgomery. You still got a great quarterback in that Brock Purdy, but as we've seen a lot in college football, Chris, and I've been meaning to tell you this last show, it's amazing how we'll hear a lot of hype about these quarterbacks in college football, but since their skill level is not truly that great yet, when they lose a couple of pieces, it's amazing how a quarterback's draft stock will just decrease quickly. Like that Josh Allen, for example, from Wyoming, was a phenomenal quarterback his second year before he went pro, loses his main tools, then he's trash. And there's other quarterbacks like that to where, man, this quarterback is such a stud, and then you graduate your two best studs
Jake
to go to
Browning.
The NFL, which
Jake Browning, that happened to him.
And then you're like, okay, well, how is the kid now? And it's like, okay, well, he's a college kid. He lost NFL skill around him. Let's see what he's got now. And only now it's like, he's a regular Joe. Now, does that mean he can't be a great quarterback later in the NFL or in his future? No. But to go from NFL talent to back to regular people, well, how good is he this year? So I lean towards Iowa simply from losing a massive amount of talent. But again, the over-under on that one is 45.5. I would be a little more optimistic to go over than this game in Sparty, but this is almost always a fun game. I can't recall the last time, and I guess I could probably look it up, but it seems like over the past decade, even when Iowa State did suck, this game's always super close because they always have this rivalry week two, week three in the year. So it should be a fun game to watch, but I would lean Iowa if I had to bet, and the points were kind of telling you it's a tight one because Iowa's favorite, as you mentioned, by 1.5 at Ames. So that would be a for sure fun game to watch at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
No doubt. And let's pick up the pace a little bit because we are running long. Do we have a spread? Can you do this real quick? Stanford and UCF, have they labeled anything on the books on this one?
I haven't seen a point spread just because they're probably not sure on Costello.
Right. That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
And I dropped the ball on that last week as far as him playing or not. That obviously, you know, that is something big right there. Stanford could make that game close. I guess my point is on that one. I'm not calling for a win. They're on the road and whatnot, but still, you can't just rule them out. But if he can't go, the quarterback that's experienced from last year, that's going to be tough. Number 24, USC and BYU at BYU. I know that maybe if a casual college football fan would be listening, they'd be like, what the hell are you talking? Why are you guys talking about BYU so much? But do the math on them, dude. Like 2 years ago, I think it was like 7 out of 9 against the spreads, or 8 out of 10 or whatever. I mean, they had go back to their record. You could see especially a touchdown every game. Either they won or lost, and a lot of them, I think 4 of them, were like 3 points and less. But how confident are you with this new QB to go on the road and take down BYU that we talk about 5-6 times a year because they're a scrappy club?
We best get this damn victory. I can't stand BYU. My team is off to a good start when I wasn't expecting it. I do not want to walk onto this podcast or call into the podcast next Monday and talk about how BYU upset the Trojans, because I know that'd be the first thing you would lead off with on the podcast, and rightfully so. I think we have the more skill. We're the more skilled team, hands down. Kind of a similar matchup like they had with Utah. Now, I know that Utah-BYU is a massive rivalry, and we don't have that with them. But we have the similar skill talent to BYU as Utah does. So I think we're a favorite team. I think the line opened at 3. USC is now -5. I might have to jump on that in case it was to get to 6 or 7. I don't know if it would. But I think that we have the skill talent. We have a team coming off a great win over Stanford, which we've not had in a long time. So if there ever was a time for USC to beat BYU, I think this is it. And from a BYU perspective, you know, sometimes, Chris, we see those flat games. You had to battle your ass off against Utah in a game closer, as you mentioned, than the score showed. And you have a miraculous win against Tennessee. Now you got to travel back. Does BYU really have a third tough game in them for a team that isn't loaded? That's a hell of a 3-game stretch to go Utah, Tennessee, USC. Maybe it's a little bit of a flat spot, maybe that's my USC fan I'm talking. Or maybe they just have a little bit of a letdown.
They do have God on their side, though, dude. Just putting that out there. I mean, Mormon God?
I'm going Trojans.
We're not going to get into it.
Fight on. I think we cover it. I think we win, but I might bet that quick before that. If that was able to get to 7, I'd be a little more scared.
That's kind of interesting. That's a good advice there as far as getting on it right now. Then we got a handful of games just flying under the radar, and then we're going to go go to the crafty pick, and then we're going to get out of here. Just kind of mention them as far as, hey, man, hardcore barn burners. Check this game out. Keep an eye on it. Maybe watch it in the second half or fourth quarter. North, a pair of 2-0 teams, North Carolina, North Carolina at Wake Forest. To me, that's an interesting game. Wake is a 3-point favorite at home. That means it's a 50-50. I already mentioned Washington State and Houston. That actually could be very interesting. Kansas State and Mississippi State, whoever wins that, may be ranked by the end of the weekend. And another one that caught my eye was, where to go? It was it Purdue? Man, I lost it. I just lost it. I think it was Purdue. Oh, Purdue and TCU could be interesting as well, as far as just from a barn burner perspective. You like points? Arizona and Texas Tech will be interesting as well. Any other games that you want to kind of mention as far as the barn burner? That should be a damn good game to the end. And then we'll get to the crafty pick, and then we'll get you out of here. And we're going to try to get you out of here on the line this week.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. My phone's been going crazy for some reason at the end of shows this year. I do think that if you're looking to bet, I would love Virginia. I think I've heard they're a pretty good up-and-coming team, and they're playing Florida State. They're favored by a touchdown at home. Florida State, I don't think they're going to have a lights-out performance on the road. You've had two brutal games at home, and now you got to play a pretty good team on the road. I would look at Virginia, and I would look at Maryland -9. I heard a couple people on my previous shows I listened to this year say Maryland's got athletes. That term's only saying, okay, this kid can play. I think they have a couple. Because as you mentioned, again, shout out to Juan Dixon, Steve Francis from last week's podcast. They score points pretty easily. And they're a 9-point favorite on the road at Temple. I'm going to keep betting that Maryland offense until they slow down, because I think they have something special going on there, Chris. So for the second week in a row, Fear of the Turtle, I'll look at Maryland to put up some points. And back in the day, I would say Bama, South Carolina might be a little bit scary, because South Carolina normally has a way of making things interesting. But this
right.
is Tua and Saban, and they're -26. No. Maybe look at the point spread, maybe. If you're going to bet Bama, probably bet the first half. Saban does like to kind of take his foot off the gas a little bit. So I don't think that will be a close game. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, a different story. And it is funny, speaking of Bama, they were a 55-point favorite last week. They won 62-10 and didn't cover. So if you bet New Mexico State last week versus Bama, you had a winning ticket, despite losing by 52 points and your team scoring, giving up 62. But a backdoor cover in a game where I checked my phone, and 13 seconds into the game, Bama had a 75-yard touchdown run. So, but besides that, brother, I think I'm pretty good. I'm hoping for a Utah win, and USC win, and I'm hoping that the Georgia Southern karma that existed against Tennessee, I hope that's evaporated, because your Golden Gophers got them at home. And I don't think a team's allowed to upset an SEC team and a Big Ten team in the same month. I think that, or in the first 3 weeks of the season, I think that's heavily frowned upon. So I'll be cheering for you and your boy PJ to go 3-0 as well, sir.
Well, and I mean, our coach is better than Tennessee's coach, so we'll be fine. No, it's good.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
Wasn't it Georgia Southern that 2 years ago actually, or no, was it last year? They were hanging with Bama at the half.
Yeah.
Straight up.
They were
hanging with them. And it's kind of like that Army team, dude. If you let them get a lead, or like you said, time of possession, it's
yep.
going to get ugly. It's going to get ugly quick. And you look at South Dakota State, they can run the ball. These mother effers can run the ball too. Just putting that out there. Let's get to the crafty pick of the week, sir.
Okay. Well, again, I have a line. Okay, got a line this week. We got two teams in the same conference. All right.
Here we go. We got conference battles. This is going to start to heat
Lovie
up now
Smith.
With these garbage teams.
Lovie Smith and his beard. I mentioned him earlier in the show, maybe for a little bit of a preview, because week one, Illinois killed Akron. They killed the Akron Zips very badly. But you know what? Akron fought back against UAB, and they lost week two. So the Akron Zips take their 0-2 butts on the road to go to Central Michigan Chippewas. So in this brilliant matchup of 0-2, MAC teams facing off against each other, the Akron Zips, again, I don't know what a zip is, but starts with a Z, is playing the Central Michigan Chippewas, who I always remember had a quarterback named Dan LeFevre, who I believe was a third-string back quarterback in the NFL for like 5 years. So shout-out to Dan LeFevre. They're playing against each other at a 2 o'clock Central matchup. The line is Central Michigan minus 3.5. So Vegas is basically saying, okay, we know Akron sucks, but they must think Central Michigan sucks too, because you normally get 3 points per home field. So they're basically a half-point favorite. I know you guys love to read the stats. I'm gonna read off one stat, and I'll let you go. Akron is averaging 11.5 points per game. When your offense scores 11 points, it's probably hard to win football. So I'm going to let you enjoy this game. By the way, it is at the Kelly/Shorts Stadium. I've never seen a stadium with a /slash in it. Like,
not a /slash,
Kelly /slash stadium. That's a special one. So take it away, brother. Going for 3-0 on the year.
And tickets are going fast there at the Kelly/Shorts Stadium. Tickets as low as $17 at Vivid Seats in a Zip. If you look at, last week we almost got a little trouble with the nickname. Well, we could get a lot of trouble with the nickname for this one too. It won't be a sexual trouble. Well, it could be. But the Zip, if you know what a Zip is when it comes to that marijuana, just think of that. This one is a doozy. This one is a doozy, no doubt about it. And Central Michigan has fallen from about 3 years ago when they beat Oklahoma State in a weird ass game that there was some controversial bullshit that went on. But you're right, man. The Zips are putting up only 11.5 points now. Central Michigan's only put up 19. Here's the kicker. They're giving up 41 points a game. So they put up 19, 41 a game. And the Zips aren't far behind at 36.5. Both teams, well, I shouldn't say, I mean, Central Michigan kind of, you know, is centraled in on the run, .130 almost compared to 49. When you look at it, man, this is an interesting game because you kind of got to throw out, being that it is a conference game, you got to throw out this non-conference stuff. You really do. You can't just, because this is something different. And you can say, well, Central Michigan's at home, they're favored. Yeah, they just got beat 61-0 by Wisconsin, though. You know what I mean? And you look back at some of their conference games to close the year, and you go, huh, shit, maybe I'll take the Zips. But I'm going to go with the home team, Central Michigan, to just sneak one out. You know damn well that they're going to sneak one out at Kelly/Shorts. What the hell is that? Why do they have a four? So there's two people, Shorts, Dave Shorts and Tim Kelly, and they just were like, just split it, dude. Just split it. Like, did that guy have to pay more, or that female have to pay more to get Kelly before the /Shorts? Like, what the hell is that? Anyway, I'm going with the Central Michigan Mountain Cats. Now, I don't even know what they are. They're the Chippewas.
Chippewas.
There's not a whole lot of Mountain Cats probably in Central Michigan. It just came out. at least we know what the hell a Chippewa is, because a lot of these teams we don't know. But I'm going to go with that Central Michigan club to kind of think back to that Oklahoma State game and get it done, like, you know, 2-minute drill, that type of thing. Third down and 18, touchdown, whatever. Something dramatic's going to happen because it always do or does in these games. I'm going Central Michigan in this garbage matchup of the week.
I may or may not have seen that if you wear jean shorts to the game on Twitter, you get in for half price tickets. So if you have the old school pair of JNCOs or old school blue jean shorts, baggy or not, if you wear jean shorts, you get half price tickets. You can go to that game for like $8.50. Now that's a bargain of a deal.
That's where the shorts come in. Okay,
I'm figuring this out now. It's a marketing scheme play, and if you can get people to come in through the gate, that's all that matters. Wear your jean shorts. All right. Well, that wraps up a very beautiful week and another fun edition of the crappy pick of the week. We should trademark that stuff. We got to start making some money off this because it makes people money too. He's 2-0 on his picks. If you go to the house, if you go to the betting window, you're 2-0. You're making money. Time to roll the dice and make it 3-0. Until then, we'll be back in a week. I will be hopefully saying fight on and USC is 3-0. If they lose to BYU, I might take a week off. I might have to go. I don't know what I'm going to do. I might just disappear for a while. Chris can talk about BYU wins and everything else. But thanks so much for listening. We love the support.
You better bring up your boy before we get out of here, dude. If you want to get paid, you better bring up your boy one time before we get out of here. It's the first show in 7 years you haven't bring up your boy.
My man Lane Kiffin is off to a tough start 0-2, but he's had to play two of the best offenses in the country. He had to face Ohio State, then he had to walk into the just freaking Ferrari car offense of UCF, and they just lit FAU up. But FAU is actually going on the road. They play Ball State, a team that is not that good, does not have any elite national championship potential offensive ties to it. And I think FAU, my boy Kiffin, finally get a victory this year to start off 1-2. So next week I'll be talking about USC and FAU both getting the dubs, and we'll have the ball rolling. So until then, enjoy your college football. As Chris said, a couple of games on Friday, and we'll be back next week. The boys are out. Have a good night. Peace.